Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Breakout Hockey Program. My name is Adam Summers, and as always, I'd like to thank you very much for joining us, particularly as we are in, we can't even say the playoff stretch run, we are in the midst, the latter stages as I sit here on Sunday morning, the latter stages of the first round of the playoffs, and we are going to get into all of that, particularly the series that have already concluded. As well as some of the other incidents going on throughout the playoffs so far. First, though, I did want to get into a bit of housekeeping. As always, you can contact the show. Send us an email to breakouthockey@radiostar.com or follow along on Twitter at Adam_Summers. The other thing I wanted to mention is that you probably are noticing a few technical differences on this show. Most notably, the file size should be much smaller. That's because after almost doing a full season worth of this show, you guys have made this show so popular that, in fact, I have had to upgrade from the free account on Podomatic.com to the pro account, which is a very happy thing because that means the show continues to grow and continues to succeed. So with that, like I said, you should notice that the file size should be much smaller, much more manageable. We should, in the coming weeks, have a better look, a cleaner look for the breakouthockey.podomatic.com website, as well as some new features up on there. I certainly, if not during the playoffs, certainly during the off season, when, as I've noted before, we are going to continue doing this program, I am going to bring back, an attempt to update on a far more regular basis the Breakout Hockey blog, which I started before the season began, but let fall by the wayside a little bit. So, as I said, I want to thank everybody who has listened so far this season. Another great thing as I've upgraded to the pro account on Podomatic.com for doing the show is that I'm able to see more detailed stats in terms of listenership. And that certainly has been nothing short of humbling as well. Last week's show was once again the most listened to show, both in terms of the streaming listens as well as the downloads that we've had yet. I've also been able to discover that we have, and this is somewhat shocking to me, but we have listeners on 4 different continents, 14 different countries in the United States. Well over half the states are represented in terms of listenership, and in Canada, we have listeners in each and every province. That's in addition to a wide array of listenership in Europe as well as some listeners on several other continents in addition. So, again, thank you very much for making what was, at the beginning of the season, a bit of an experiment for me to branch off and do a all-hockey show in addition to the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare that I do with Mike Sempervivi over at F4WOnline.com. So, thank you, everyone, for making it a success. And hopefully, as a little bit of a side note, we may have Mike on over the course of the next couple of weeks as the playoffs continue to give his thoughts in a segment on some shows coming up. So we shall see if that materializes. But in any event, good times continue on the Breakout Hockey Program. With that in mind, definitely want to get into, as I mentioned before, I'm recording this show on a Sunday morning. I want to get into the New York and Washington series, which ended on Saturday, as well as the Detroit and Phoenix series, which ended earlier on in the week with a sweep for the Detroit Red Wings. So definitely want to get into that, but also want to get into some of the again, just crazy, bizarre things that have happened. The first week and a half, 10 days or so of the playoffs have really been fitting for just a crazy, bizarre season that we've talked about over the last 6 months or so on this show. The playoffs have certainly not let up in that manner. We've seen some huge leads get squandered, whether it be in the New York and Washington series, whether it be in the San Jose and the San Jose and LA series, which has been another pretty wild series. Some lopsided scores, particularly the last couple of games. Again, as I record this, Game 6 of the Blackhawks-Vancouver Canucks series has not yet happened. But Games 4 and 5 of that series, certainly lopsided in the favor of the Blackhawks. We've seen one game in which Anaheim blew out Nashville, which was shocking, and that Pecorine has been great for pretty much the whole season in the playoffs, barring that one game. Just on Saturday, an 8-2 drubbing of the Pittsburgh Penguins by the Tampa Bay Lightning. So some decidedly non-playoff type of scores there. And then more than anything else, we've seen just craziness as far as headshots and subsequently the suspensions or lack thereof, the lack of teeth in the National Hockey League disciplinary system coming out again. Most notably, at least from my perspective, the headshot from Rafi Torres to Brent Seabrook, which knocked Brent Seabrook out of the series so far, and in a strange way, it served as a rallying cry for the defending Stanley Cup champion Blackhawks. But Rafi Torres, in his first game back after a two-game suspension, or after a suspension, I should say, that bled into the playoffs by two games, his first game back, game three, and he lays out Brent Seabrook in a hit that most hockey people, and again, that's a relative term as to the worth of those opinions, but most hockey people seem to think warranted a suspension, but no suspension was given. We saw headshots in the one of the Tampa Bay Lightning Pittsburgh Penguins games, which basically ended up being resulting in offsetting one game suspensions for Chris Kunitz and Steve Downey. We saw Bobby Ryan get suspended for stomping the skate or the ankle area of a Nashville Predators player. That resulted in a one-game suspension. And that was amazing in that Bobby Ryan has been on the opposite ends of the spectrum in that series, obviously maligned for the skate-stomping incident. And then several days later scored, I don't really think it's an overstatement to say the goal of our generation in the National Hockey League. People are comparing this to the legendary goal that Mario Lemieux scored years ago that is immortalized, among other places, in the Open of Hockey Night in Canada every Saturday night on CBC. Just an incredible goal. If you have not seen this, by the way, I'm sure if you just Google Bobby Ryan goal, this will come up in relatively short order. Just an amazing inside-out play that, yes, the defending Nashville Predator was without his stick, but still an absolutely ridiculous goal that after he scored it, it seemed as though Bobby Ryan was as surprised as everybody that this goal worked. But going back to the disciplinary situation, we've already had four suspensions in the playoffs. We've had several other plays, including the hit on Brent Seabrook that I mentioned earlier, that were at least questionable hits, I think definitely suspension-worthy. And that led to Colin Campbell, the NHL's head of discipline, pretty much having a public meltdown on the Cebulski and Friends, or Cebulski and Company, whatever the radio show is, the new TSN radio program. If you get a chance, seek this out. The audio is online. I'm sure the audio is up on YouTube. It may even be up on TSN Radio's website. But just an amazing interview in that they ask Colin Campbell about the suspensions, and he basically admits that it's a thankless job that he does. He gets very defensive multiple times when asked questions about the Torres hit, for example. He carries it as a badge of honor that apparently by not suspending Rafi Torres, which is similar to some of the other non-suspensions that took place earlier in the year, that somehow is some badge of honor because he didn't do the easy thing. Colin Campbell made the difficult decision. Well, sometimes the easy decision is the right one. And in that hit and several others throughout the year, that would be the right one, the right decision to make the easy call, which is to suspend a player who is just coming off a suspension and clearly targets the head, does not even attempt to play the puck. In the case of the Seabrook hit, it was obviously there was a penalty there. It was interference, so that tells you that he was not making an attempt to play the puck, and he clearly targeted the head, which, it's amazing to me that the NHL continues to even have the whole intent to injure clause in the rules as far as illegal hits are concerned, because they never use that to enforce clear headshots that may that may not rise to the blindside headshot rule, which, again, that was another part of this, the explanation or the excuse-making, as it may be a better description, of why Rafi Torres was not suspended. The fact that somehow because it was behind the net, it cannot be blindside because there's not the option of north-south or east-west. It basically, even though it's east-west, it basically is governed as a north-south hit, which has basically led to speculation and really, even though the NHL won't come out and confirm it, I mean, what the ruling indicates basically states this, that it's open season to hit somebody in the head as long as you're behind the net, which coaches throughout the week said they weren't aware of. Players on teams throughout the league said that they weren't aware of, which that's only going to lead to more questions, more gray area, which is the last thing we need. The hand-wringing and the defending by Gary Bettman throughout the week as well was fascinating, in that he continued to say that, well, it was a legal hit because it wasn't a blindside hit. And what I've talked about on this show before is that if the true intent of Rule 48, taking away blindside headshots or any of the other steps, many of them cosmetic, that the league has taken to eliminate headshots, if the reason that you are putting those rules into place are, if the reason is to eliminate or cut down on concussions, then why is the exact same play coming from a different direction or now apparently in a different spot on the ice? Why is that legal if the result is exactly the same, which is a concussion, an injury to the brain, which significantly affects a player's ability to play hockey, maybe down the line be able to live a productive life? If we've seen, as we've read about in several studies, we're starting to see more studies in hockey. Obviously, what's happened in professional football, what has become very apparent in pro wrestling of all things in the last couple of years as well. A concussion, whether it comes from the front, whether it's an elbow from behind, whether it's lateral, a concussion, whether it is out in front of the net or behind the net, is a concussion. And if the goal is to try to preserve the health of players and the goal is to try to cut down on concussions, I don't see the point or the validity in making a distinction between those sorts of headshots as if a concussion from one spot on the ice is better or less injurious than a concussion from the other side. So we shall see. It's been a week of highs and lows for the National Hockey League and Gary Bettman in terms of he's had to defend those situations. He's also in what seems to be the final death throes of the Glendale Goldwater Institute, Phoenix Coyotes, Matthew Holzhauser debacle, in that at some point soon, you would think, as we get towards May, as we certainly get towards June, the National Hockey League is going to have to make a schedule. To make a final schedule, they have to know where all 30 teams are going to be playing. That obviously is an important cog in the wheel of producing a schedule. And nothing has changed in Glendale as far as the ability to sell the municipal bonds that are needed to have the transaction between the city of Glendale and Matthew Holzhauser to take over the operation and ownership of the Phoenix Coyotes. That cannot take place until those bonds are sold. The issues that the Goldwater Institute has with the deals as it is currently constructed, a big part of those issues is the fact that the parking rights are going to be sold by a party, or are going to be bought by a party basically who already owns them, which is certainly a problem. The issues with that, the Goldwater Institute says, violate the gift clause that is part of the Constitution in the state of Arizona. So there are still many, many problems. And as long as the threat of a lawsuit, which one would think that that lawsuit does have some legs, I'm certainly not a lawyer, but I can't imagine it would be dismissed outright, which is, one would think, what is drying up the market to sell those municipal bonds, which in turn has stalled out the purchase agreement from going through. There have been various reports throughout the week, actually, shortly after I recorded the last show that Gary Bettman had gone to the NHL Board of Governors and had attempted to get approval or permission to buy up $50 million of the $100 million in bonds that need to be sold. Apparently, the city of Glendale has commitments, even though the bonds have not been purchased, to the best of my knowledge. They have commitments from investors for approximately half of that $100 million total, $50 million. So the thought is that Bettman went to the Board of Governors to try to get approval to buy the other $50 million to keep the league, or to keep the Phoenix Coyotes, who have lost upwards of $30 million a year for the last several years that the league has taken ownership of the team. Apparently that effort by Bettman to get the Board of Governors to buy the $50 million in bonds was summarily dismissed, which has forced them to force Bettman, force Holsizer, the city of Glendale, to go back to the drawing board. But it does not appear that by my estimation, and it's you never want to say something is a done deal because we've seen so many twists and turns in the Phoenix situation. I mean, you think back to a couple years ago when Jim Balsillie was close to purchasing the team from Jerry Moyes, who plunged the Coyotes into bankruptcy, and Balsillie was going to move that team to Hamilton, Ontario. That seems like a decade ago. It was a couple years ago. We've seen Chicago Bulls and White Sox owner Jerry Reinsdorf make a failed bid to purchase the team. So who knows where this will go, but it seems closer than it ever has before that the Phoenix Coyotes will be returning to Winnipeg, to Manitoba. There are still many questions as to if they do move back, what the name of the team would be. A lot of talk is that they wouldn't be the Winnipeg Jets. Several weeks ago, we heard that they may, in fact, just be the Manitoba Moose, which is the current name of the AHL team that the prospective owners, True North Sports and Entertainment in Manitoba, that is the name of the AHL team that they own. There was talk that the new NHL team would be named the Moose. There's also a report out there that they would be named the Manitoba Jets as a way to really draw in more of the province as a whole, and that they would basically have the same logo and color scheme that they did as the Winnipeg Jets. So if that comes to pass, we shall see. But a very emotional scene sort of transitioning here to the Detroit versus Phoenix series as the Phoenix Coyotes fans who, after another season of certainly not coming close to filling up the building on the vast majority of nights, the Phoenix Coyotes fans, along with a very large contingent of Detroit Red Wings fans, did fill up the Jobbing.com arena for both playoff games that were played there, games 3 and 4. It is important to note, however, that the ticket prices for these playoff games were more akin to AHL playoff ticket prices than they were NHL ticket prices. You had a promotion going on in Phoenix towards the end of the regular season that you could get two regular season games and one playoff game in the lower bowl, I believe, for under $100 total. So certainly not the high-end ticket prices that you would see in many other thriving hockey markets around playoff time. But they did fill up the building. Not enough to win the series, and not enough, it seems, to stave off relocation. In the end, I guess it really, at this point, didn't matter what the attendance was, much like actually what happened in Winnipeg years and years ago when they moved. Attendance was very solid, but that was not the issue. Here, it may not be the immediate issue. The fact that they really have never consistently drawn for 15 years, the fact that they've never turned a profit in Phoenix and Glendale, I think is a major part of why they probably haven't been able to find a buyer and why the team has been hemorrhaging money so much. But the Detroit and Phoenix series, a rematch from last year's first round, which went 7 games. Phoenix pushed Detroit to the absolute brink before Detroit blew out Phoenix in that game. Certainly a much different series here in 2010-2011. A 4-game sweep for the Detroit Red Wings, 4-2 in Game 1, 4-3 in Game 2, both of those in Detroit, and then 4-2 Detroit in Game 3, and 6-3 Detroit in Game 4. A shame because several Phoenix Coyotes, including Captain Shane Doan, played very well throughout the series. But if nothing else, or more than anything else, really, the thing that betrayed them in this series, obviously a lack of depth compared to that of the Detroit Red Wings. But Ilya Bryzgalov was certainly not the goaltender that he had been throughout the entirety of the regular season. A guy who, even though he was not one of the three goaltenders who received Vezina nomination this week, a goaltender who was certainly in the mix and was unable to find that form throughout this series. Seemed distracted, did not seem himself. Throughout the years we've heard he is borderline crazy. Apparently for a good stretch of the early part of his tenure with the Phoenix Coyotes, he actually thought that they had Rick Nash on the team, not Tyson Nash. This is apparently true. This is not something that I'm making up. This is something that was true for a length of time. He is, even by goaltender standards, very odd. His head did not seem to be into the games. He did not come up with the big saves at the big times. He also let in some questionable goals, which when you're playing a team that is as dynamic as Detroit is, and you are a team in Phoenix that does not have the dynamic scoring that a lot of other playoff teams do, a rough combination that led to an early ouster for the Phoenix Coyotes. And it's going to be interesting, because if they do move to Winnipeg, we certainly know that Ilya Bryzgalov is not going to go there. He came out in an interview and complained about how cold Winnipeg is, which for a guy from Russia is a bit interesting. Complained how there are no parks, there is no entertaining. I don't know what exactly he's looking for, but I don't think that he's giving Winnipeg enough credit. Yes, it is a cold place, but it is also a place that has a heck of a lot to do. A great hockey town, but apparently Ilya Bryzgalov does not want any of that. He may end up following the Evgeny Nabokov plan of heading to the KHL. Hopefully that works out better for Bryzgalov if he does that than it did for Nabokov. And that Nabokov went over there. He didn't like it. His family didn't like it. Whatever the real reason was, came back here, tried to sign with Detroit, got claimed on waivers by New York Islanders, did not report to the Islanders, and now the Islanders have exercised their option to toll the contract of Evgeny Nabokov for the 2011-2012 season, which means that if Evgeny Nabokov is going to play in the National Hockey League next year, it will have to be with the New York Islanders, which I know, particularly when this story broke, I had some good discussions, some good back and forth with several people, and there's two schools of thought. One, that all the Islanders shouldn't hold him to it if he doesn't want to be there. The other school of thought, which I follow, is that if you're Evgeny Nabokov, you priced yourself out of the National Hockey League, then you left the KHL to come back, and you want to pick and choose where you can play, which isn't part of the rules for him coming back in on waivers. You can't play with the Red Wings. The Islanders claim you. It would have been a perfect scenario for him to go in, prove that he can still play, get paid, and most likely he would have played well. I mean, with how well the Islanders played with Al Montoya in front of them, you would have thought that Evgeny Nabokov would have done pretty well, unless he was on the Ilya Bryzgalov motivational plan. But instead, he doesn't do that. He is sitting on the shelf, not playing hockey. Now, he can only play for the Islanders next season. He would have been in a situation where he probably would have been signed next season by a contender for certainly not upwards of the $6 million he was looking for at the end of last offseason, but probably better than what he is going to be getting paid if he plays for a team that he doesn't even want to play for. So, not a great situation for Nabokov. We'll see if Bryzgalov puts himself in a similar scenario this offseason. As far as Detroit, the best-case scenario for them, they get through the series early, they don't sustain many additional injuries throughout the series, and they have what's going to amount to probably as much as a week to get ready, get rested, and get healthy for the second round, which for an older team, which has been injury prone the last couple of years, you could not ask for a better scenario. The other series that, as of Sunday morning, has ended is the New York Rangers-Washington Capitals series, which a fascinating series to watch on several levels. A close series throughout, even though it only went five games. A series that could very easily have ended up similar to the New York, or I should say the Washington Capitals series against the Montreal Canadiens last year in the first round, in that you had a team who was defense first, blocked a lot of shots, and had a world-class goaltender in Henrik Lundqvist, that being the New York Rangers, and you had a Washington Capitals team who, particularly early on in the series, struggled a little bit to score goals. Really, to me, there were several turning points in the series. Everybody is going to point to, and rightfully so, what happened in Game 4 in double overtime, which we'll get to. But even Game 1 of the series, which was an overtime game, this game could have gone either way. Alexander Semin scoring the overtime winner. It took almost the entire first overtime for Washington to win. And you think back to that first game, and if they had lost in overtime in a low-scoring affair like that game was, who knows if Washington would have been able to recover. They did win that game. They also came back to win 2-0 against the Rangers in Game 2. Then you go to Game 3 back in New York against the Rangers in Madison Square Garden. This game, really, you thought at this point maybe this was going to get the Rangers back in. Brandon Dubinsky scores to make the series 2-1. The Rangers win at 3-2. It looks like maybe they're back in the series, and that transitions to Game 4 at Madison Square Garden. You had the subplot of Bruce Boudreau trashing Madison Square Garden, basically calling it a dump for lack of more eloquent term. That certainly led to the crowd being even more fired up than usual. You would think it was a tactic, as we've seen through many players and coaches late in the season and in the playoffs, trying to take the heat off of their teammates or their players and sort of causing a created controversy. But the comeback by the Washington Capitals in Game 4 was nothing short of remarkable. In the third period, the New York Rangers had a 3-goal lead. They were up 3-0. The Capitals raced back to tie the game up, take it to overtime, take it to double overtime. Incredibly, and this really in a lot of ways was emblematic of the entire season for Marian Gaborik as a New York Ranger. After having an effective year last year for them, just could never get going this year. And out of what seemed to be a seemingly harmless, simple play in the second overtime, where the Washington Capitals shot the puck in somewhat harmlessly, Henrik Lundqvist, ready to pounce on the puck, looked like he was going to try to freeze the puck once it got to him. The puck is several feet out in front of Lundqvist. Inexplicably, Marian Gaborik swoops in, tries to sweep the puck off to the corner, instead sweeps it right to the Washington Capitals' Jason Chimera, who puts the puck in, and the Washington Capitals win that game 4-3. Henrik Lundqvist looked like he wanted to break things. Marian Gaborik looked like he just could not believe what had happened, and that led into the 3-1 victory in Game 5 on Saturday for the Washington Capitals, who exercise some demons in that they get out of the first round. That's not something that they have done often in recent years, even though they've been a tremendously successful regular season team. So they will await the winner of one of the other Eastern Conference series, and we shall see what happens. Again, I don't want to date the show too much by going greatly in depth to the other series that are still going on. Quick thoughts: Boston and Montreal, an amazing series. Saturday night, Game 5 was, without a doubt, the best game that's been played this year in the playoffs. The margin of error in these games has been remarkable. You had Montreal winning the first two games by really scoring the first goal, locking it down, not allowing Boston to assert themselves physically or offensively. Game three, Boston comes out much more motivated in Montreal. Montreal plays an amazing third period, but isn't able to extend the game and get the win. Then you have game four back in Montreal. The Habs play a great, great maybe first period and a half or so. Just maybe the best they had looked in the series to that point. Got a lead and got comfortable and then got beat. Just stop playing their game in Montreal. When you get guys out there that start to freelance or that just aren't, or when they just do things on their own, that does not usually work very well for Montreal. So we shall see what ends up happening in that series. As I mentioned earlier, Game 6 coming up on Tuesday, Game 7 coming up. Or I should say, yeah, Game 6 coming up on Tuesday, Game 7, if necessary, coming up just one day later on Wednesday. So a back-to-back scenario there. But, yeah, just an incredible game. Like I said, probably the best game of the playoffs so far on Saturday night between Boston and Montreal. Other series that are still ongoing could be over by the time you listen to this, or maybe they're going to go much longer. Vancouver, Chicago, which certainly the first three games were absolute domination by Vancouver. Or really not, actually. I think to be more accurate, Vancouver had several games where, well, particularly game one, they were very strong. Chicago was not. Games two and three, Vancouver very sharp, but Chicago could have won both those games, whereas games four and five on Chicago's part were obviously complete domination, 12-2 combined score, chasing Luongo out of the net both games, which saw the return of Dave Boland and the absence of Brent Seabrook. So I'll be getting ready to head on down to the United Center for what should be a crazy, crazy Game 6 coming up later on Sunday night. If the Blackhawks do win that game, Game 7 would be late, at least here in the Central Time Zone, late Tuesday night back in Vancouver. So a fascinating series that we'll get into much more on most likely next Thursday's show, where we recap the first round and preview the second round. The other series that I briefly wanted to mention is Buffalo and Philadelphia, which so far, true to my prediction at least, it looks as though Buffalo may hold on and win this series up 3-2 after five games, particularly Game 5, where Brian Boucher was just awful. A couple of the goals in particular where the shot was from the side of the net or even behind the net, and he just wasn't hugging the post tight enough, didn't seem to be mentally sharp, and took out his anger and frustration on many sticks and his own mask in the hallway after he was pulled early from that game. The Flyers, without Chris Pronger, now turn to most likely Michael Layton to try to save the series, which that game taking place Sunday afternoon, so many of you may already know the outcome of that series by the time you listen to this show. But it's been, to me, a pretty simple series, other than the goaltending faltering at points throughout the series for Philadelphia, is that whenever Buffalo is able to stay out of the penalty box, they're winning the game. So when they are ending up in the penalty box with regularity, Philadelphia is converting those power plays with regularity. So we shall see how that all goes. It could be lining up for there's a scenario where Washington could have, at least on paper, which as these playoffs have shown isn't worth a whole lot, but on paper, Washington could have a cakewalk at least to the conference finals, if not the Stanley Cup finals. So I think with that, I'm going to close out the show. The only other thing I want to briefly get into, and we'll get into this in much greater detail on later shows, but the NHL, the TV deal to stay on the NBC Sports Group here in the States, that being the NBC over-the-air network, as well as the Versus cable channel, which will soon be rebranded, my guess is, to NBC Sportsnet within the next 30 to 60 days. I, for one, fall on the side of the ledger that is very happy that the league is not going back to ESPN. It's very easy and simple to say, oh, we have to be on ESPN. Why would anybody not want to be on ESPN? Well, yes, if the circumstances are perfect and you are a featured sports property on ESPN, okay, that's great. But we all know that if the NHL was to go to ESPN, they would be behind the NBA, Major League Baseball, the National Football League, NASCAR, college sports as well, and that's exactly the scenario they found themselves in the last time they were on ESPN, and they were buried. They were on ESPN2. They did not have a nightly show the last couple of years when NHL Tonight was canceled. They were very rarely promoted. There was almost never a pre- or post-game show. There were times where the beginning of games were preempted. So I don't see that that scenario would change greatly. It seemed as though the deal that ESPN was looking for was a game of the week on ESPN2, playoff games throughout the playoffs on ESPN2, and a couple of Stanley Cup Finals games on ABC, along with many more games being carried exclusively on ESPN3.com, which, while yes, it's great to watch games online, I don't think that exclusivity for games being online would have been the way to go, and I don't think it would have been the way to continue to grow the game. So when you compare that to what NBC was offering, 90 regular season games on the cable channel, 10 regular season games, it sounds like, on NBC, complete coverage of all playoff games on the NBC family of channels throughout the course of all four rounds of the Stanley Cup playoffs. It just seemed as though it was a no-brainer when you look also at the increase of rights fees annually from around $75 million a year to $200 million a year, which will probably not this going into next season, but the season after should be a fairly drastic help to the salary cap. So to me, it's all positives. I think the league made the right decision, and it's going to be interesting to see how, considering the growth that the league has had in the States the last, 3 to 5 years or so, if you want to go with that long range looking back, the fact that they have a stable partner for the next 10 years, as long as there is not a labor dispute, to me bodes very well for the future of the league here in the United States. So, with that, as I said a few minutes ago, going to close out the show. As the first round concludes, make sure to enjoy the hockey, whether you're watching on television or you are lucky enough to be attending the playoff games in person. Also, if you live near an AHL team, the AHL playoffs are going on. Things are pretty crazy there. Incredible series between the Binghamton Senators and the Manchester team, that is the LA Kings farm team, just concluded last night with the Senators winning. So that is a great brand of hockey to get out and check as well, along with any other hockey that you have in your area. So hopefully you will check all that out. Have a good time. Be safe at the games. And as always, keep it simple.